Yo.
Yo. What's up, man?
Hi.
This is Toxic and Problematic. It's a podcast that
we
do.
You're toxic, I'm problematic.
That's right. We do this show. We try and do it once a week. You look back, you say, well, you don't do it every week. Well, we do take some breaks, but yeah, it's a weekly podcast where we talk about
whatever.
We're
trying to do better this year.
We're trying to do better this year, and we try to get guests on the show when we can. We've got a guest this week, which I'm excited about. He's smart. This guy went to college.
Yeah.
Not just any college, but like a real college.
He went to Harvard.
Harvard, which I think is one of the better ones. And he's written a few books, including this Fantasyland book, which is a book that I read, Snowcone read, and we've talked about it. It just keeps coming up because of all this conspiracy theory stuff that's
been going on. I read
the
Wikipedia page on it, so
that's all you need.
Fine.
Read the sample on Amazon, and you'll get the basic idea. The basic idea is that America might be uniquely conspiratorial. We know that Americans believe in angels. We see all those things. Like, did you know that this percentage of Americans believe in actual angels and this percentage believe all those different things? And we go, man, we're a really religious country, or we believe in a lot of crazy things. Why is that? Well, that's why he wrote this book. Talks about our history, our forefathers, our ancestors, and, you know, they might have been a little bit crazy when they got here, but they also dreamed big. So you mix those two things together, and
I'll tell you what else you mix together. Mitra 9.
And a little water, right?
Mix them together, drink it down.
Yeah.
Feels great. Go to mitra-9.com.
Get some Go Packs.
And get some Go Packs, maybe some seltzers, but get some Go Packs.
I think that's what you'll like.
And use the
promo code.
Yeah.
Problematic. At checkout. And you
and
will get a nice
discount. And then drive to a liquor store and buy some Church of Lies of Vodka.
Absolutely.
Take a picture of it and send it to me on social media. Post it and then, you know, at LazloKC, wherever.
And will you repost it?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. And what else? Oh, and if you need, you know, because I think it's nice, especially in the wintertime, it's nice to be warm. In the summertime, it's good to be cool. It's also good to have plumbing that works. I've heard these things can be nice luxuries. If you need help with any of those things, heating, cooling, plumbing, Dick Ray, master plumber, heating and cooling. They fixed my air conditioner last summer because it broke. And then as soon as winter hit, my furnace went out and they fixed that. And they were the only people that they were good guys. Like, I trusted them and they actually did it. And I think I sent them to you too, right, Leslie? So, yeah.
And I think, you know, the last thing, you know, if you need anything, if you need someone to suck your dick.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, let them come on their face at Snowcone.
Hello.
Yeah. He's over there.
How's it going?
So just holler. He'll know why you're reaching out.
Just reach out and be like, you're my guy.
Yep. So there you go.
There you go.
That's all of them. Church of Lies of Vodka, mitra-9.com, Dick Ray Master Plumber Heating and Cooling, and I think we're ready for this interview.
Face.
Hey, don't come face. We're ready for this interview, Snowcone. Hello, Mr. Anderson. Kurt Anderson, are you there?
I am here.
Should we call you Mr. Anderson? Can we call you Kurt?
Please don't.
Okay. We'll call you Kurt. Kurt Anderson, thank you so much for taking the time to do this. We'd been wanting to do this interview for a while. I know our producer had reached out to you a couple times in the past because we've all read your book. Fantasyland is the name of the book, by the way, How America Went Haywire. But you've written several books. But your Fantasyland book really has just felt, and I suppose it always kind of feels, unfortunately these days, it feels topical just because of, it's like every day we talk about something else, whether it's a conspiracy theories about the wildfires in California or the conspiracies currently that we're all Chiefs fans here in Kansas City. So the conspiracies that the NFL is rigged and that the refs are out to get us because they've got to fix the game. Just all this conspiratorial thinking. Don't forget drones. We got all the drones. And it had never dawned on me until I read your book, this idea that part of the reason, perhaps, that Americans seem to be even more conspiratorial than a lot of other countries is because it's actually in our DNA. It's in our founding. And that had never crossed my mind until I read your book. And I mean, is that the basic thesis that we can start with? Is that if we go back and look at the first settlers here, that we all kind of have, whether you're super religious or just super into conspiracy theories, those things are not necessarily always all that different. And could it be that this is just who we are as a country and have always been?
That is Fantasyland in a nutshell. Well done. You get an A.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. And you know, it didn't start out, I didn't certainly have that big idea. I back years ago, as it started to head in this direction, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago, when Stephen Colbert started using the word truthy, which I loved, for things that weren't exactly true, but were, you know, purported to be real.
Right.
I started thinking about it and wondered how long it went. Where did it come from? And because I thought this has changed since I was a kid. I mean, when I was a little kid, yeah, I know. I lived through JFK's assassination. So, you know, I when I was a kid, that's a conspiracy theory. You know, so I was aware of it, but like it the proliferation, you know, as I got older was amazing. And I just started like, okay, how did this happen? And spent a couple of years researching it and finding out, yes, that's exactly that. And first I said, oh, maybe this happened. I wrote a book about the late 60s, a novel set in the late 60s. I thought, oh, okay, there's a lot of this kind of enabling of this then, right? I mean, your truth is your truth, my truth is my truth, believe whatever you want, you know, that's, you know, and new age everything and all that stuff. I said, but no, and that was a big moment in this evolution of the, then I look back further and further, and it goes all the way back. As you say, certain kinds of, you know, I mean, the religious people the English religious people who came here were people whose basically were, you know, were so extreme in their belief in Christian Puritanism in 1620 that they were kicked out,
right,
of you know, mainstream English religion, right? And they went to Holland. They couldn't manage there, so they came here, you know, and they were kooks. You know, I mean, they really were, and thought that, you know, the Second Coming was going to happen here, and they had to destroy the Indians because, you know, they were Satan's people, and blah, blah, blah. Or else, if the non-religious people who came here thought they were going to all come here and the streets were paved with gold, and they were just going to be able to pick up gold off the ground as soon as they got here.
That's the other side of it, right? You've got people who came here thinking Jesus is coming back. I'm speaking in tongues, whatever it is. And I don't mean Jesus is coming back. I mean like Jesus is coming back tomorrow, sort of thing. Which I know Christians believe Jesus is coming back, but there is kind of a difference in the way that certain Christians believe and the way that they interpret certain things in the Bible. And you point out in the book that you've got that group on one end, these people who are very, I don't know, do we call it kind of fantastical believers? They believe in angels and these types of things that America still to this day is known as being one of those countries where we have more people who believe that angels are actually real things than anyone else, that sort of stuff. They're on one side. And then on the other side, you've got people who are saying, I'm going to get over there and I'm going to be a millionaire because there's gold over there and I'm going to be the one who finds it. So it's this big time fantastical thinking either way.
Right. And it was, and what I, again, like a thing I didn't know that I talked about in the book is that it was advertised. It was like the first global marketing thing back in the 1600s, 1700s, like go to America, come to America, you know? And so there was a push in that way to get these people to get these, you know, colonists over here and start a country. And so, so, you know, we were a nation of whatever, suckers and grifters from the start, you know, basically.
But could you say, in the same sense, dreamers?
Sure.
Because no, actually, I feel like, you know, when you describe that, it wasn't that much different than, you said you lived through JFK, so you're a little bit older than me, but it's not that much different than my uncle and my grandfather, sometime when I was a kid, who were like, we're moving to Texas because we're going to get rich on oil.
For sure.
Right? It was kind of the same thing. Like, you know, we got to get out of Detroit and get to where the oil is.
Yep. No, that is the good side. And there always was a good side of this. And it's why America has been great. Right. I mean, you know, I can invent the personal computer, whatever the thing is. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that is part of the American spirit.
Yeah, you're absolutely not. I just want to make it clear for people, if you read the book, you are absolutely not anti-religion. You're not anti-Christianity in any way, shape, or form. And you're not anti-dreaming big.
Right, yeah.
Dreaming big.
Oh, no. And again, I make distinctions between certain kinds of religious belief or certain kinds of mystical belief. I have mystical beliefs myself, you know. But no, I try to carefully
parse it, you know, and the problem with it is when it, a couple of things, when A, it kind of, as it has in the last 50 years, as I argue in the book, kind of went out of control, and no more gatekeepers, no more mainstream anything, no more establishment, you know. I mean, that to me, starting in the late 60s, went too far, you know, and conservatives used to hate that, and then the conservatives became the ones doing it more than anyone else. But back then, too, when I was a kid, one's religion was not a thing you really, that came into the public sphere. It wasn't about who you voted for. It was a separate thing, right?
Yeah.
And so that's when it, to me, when it gets problematic and dangerous, when like politics becomes a religious war, you know, that's where you get into trouble, seems to me.
Now, when did that, I mean, I guess as we're going back, when did that happen? It seems like, you know, interestingly enough, his name keeps coming up and they're going to release the files, but Kennedy, first Catholic to be a president, right. People were upset about that, right? So there was like some sort of like, hey, you know, we don't like Catholics being presidents here. So, I mean, it goes back that far, right, at least.
Well, we didn't like, because we were Protestants, you know, we Americans, most of them, were Protestants back in the first few centuries. So they didn't like Catholics at all. And anti-Catholic sentiment, and that was that. Then when the Irish came here, boy, that was a big part, let alone Mexicans, right? So that fed that. That was a religious thing, but it never became, and that did feed into politics, has, again, since the anti-immigrant, anti-Catholic stuff in the 1840s and 50s. So we've been here before.
Right.
Yes. But never to this degree. We've never had one of our big political parties identifying as this effectively religious party. That's new. The extent and intensity of where it's gone today is a new thing. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying this predilection, conspiracy theory, extreme, believe whatever you want, think things that aren't true are true, has been a chronic condition, a kind of defining American chronic condition that just became, an acute condition, recently. You know, there, and we all know those, you know, there's chronic illnesses that are okay until,
they spread. Yeah.
No, they're not. Yeah, exactly.
For me, I was a freshman in college on 9/11. And yeah. To me, a big turning point in my mind was that documentary, I say documentary with air quotes, Loose Change, because the internet was still kind of in its infancy. The idea of sharing video on the internet was still relatively new idea. And suddenly people were saying, hey, there's this documentary about what really happened on 9/11, that those buildings could not have come down from just jet fuel, that building number 7, you know, all the things that we've heard. And because up until that point, gatekeeping for the most part still was a thing. You still had the nightly news, you still had the newspapers, and for the most part, you kind of knew these people are expected to tell the truth, and if they don't, they're going to have to be held accountable for it. So as a college kid, I thought, well, documentaries tell the truth. They're like investigative journalism, right? What's more honest than a documentary? And everything they said made logical sense. And I will never forget, I don't know what the gap was there, how much time went by before someone, I think it was Popular Mechanics, put out a rebuttal to the Loose Change documentary, and they had engineers talking and all this, and they were explaining how some of the stuff in the documentary, in the Loose Change documentary, was just made up. Some of it was just totally wrong. And as I'm watching all this, I was going, and I'll never forget this, that's why I bring it up. I remember thinking, oh, they were just wrong. Oh, they just made that part up. That didn't even actually happen. Oh, this was taken totally out of context. That's not what this is. And that's when it dawned on me, like, who can we trust? And of course, it only got worse from there with the advent of social media. But that felt like a big turning point in my life.
Well, the internet was a big turning point in this, 500-year history, right?
Sure.
I mean, it gave what used to be considered the crackpots, the fringe people, the whatever, this kind of infrastructure where they could, create their alternative realities. And so the same time, the same moment 9/11 happened, 2001, was exactly when, vaccines cause autism became a thing,
right?
And, you know, and it was one of the first big viral ideas that was spread of misinformation and untruths that was spread by the internet at the same time. So yeah, so I would say it was a chronic condition. This thing and this kind of weakness for exciting untruths. And it was kind of went into a next gear during the 60s and 70s, and then went into this pie gear with the internet, and here we are.
And not only that, but you say crackpots. I think a lot of people assume I can spot a crackpot. I know when a carny's trying to sell me something, right? But going back to that Loose Change documentary, here was someone who looked like a person, a perfectly reasonable person, an intelligent person who was telling me this. It's not like he hadn't showered in days, which is, I guess, what maybe I was subconsciously expecting. If you said someone's going to make up a complete false story, false narrative about what happened on that day, and they're going to make a documentary about it. Instead, it looked like a documentary. He sounded like someone who knew what he was talking about. And people only got better and better at that. And I know that he wasn't the first by far, but I do think that there was something to the idea that I thought I could spot it, just like a lot of people think I could spot a psychopath. I could spot, and then it happens, and you go, "Oh, I believe that." And now they're telling me that these engineers are telling me that it was all really dumb to believe that. You know, I didn't know.
And again, that's part of this history, right? Of Americans. I mean, the con man. That's an American phrase. We invented that phrase because in the 19th century, right? Because you know, it's easy to be suckered and fooled by somebody who's trying to take advantage of you with lies. And in terms of I could tell a crackpot. This guy isn't like, you know, some homeless guy on the street just screaming his nutty things. Well, that is kind of part of what I'm saying about the internet. Suddenly there was this thing that, well, that looks like a legit thing.
It's official.
You can that looks like a newspaper. Oh, that sounds like that's a documentary. So it sort of made everything look the same, right? And all the distinctions that used to be easier, like, oh, this is this person. They're, you can believe them. And as you say, if you can't, then they're exposed, and you no longer do, and they lose their credibility. And suddenly, you know, now that the zone that everything is regarded as, well, I did my research, it's equally true as the thing you think. You know, it's this, and again, I quote this line more than once in the book, that Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan said back in the 80s or 90s, that everybody is entitled to his own opinion, but he's not entitled to his own facts. And that was before it had really happened, and he was wise enough to see to where we got to. It
didn't take long before we were talking about alternative facts. Exactly.
Let me ask you a question, because it sounds like a lot of like what we talk about when we go back. You say it's nothing new, and I would actually say like it's you know, maybe even further back than that. So like, I would assume, I have no idea, and I'm just guessing, and you're obviously, I mean, I have a GED, you went to Harvard. So, you know, let's start there. But my guess is when, you know, the Greeks couldn't explain what the sun was, they came up with a sun god. When they couldn't explain what love was, they came up with a love god. When they couldn't explain, you know, all these different things, a sea god and whatever it was, right? And then slowly but surely, there became information, and they're like, yeah, wait, there's really not like a sun god. This is the sun and why it does whatever the fuck it does. I don't know what it does, but, right, this is the sun, and this is, you know, the sea, and this is love, and we can explain these things through science now, right? And you slowly got rid of all these gods. I've always thought the one thing we can't explain is death, so that's why you still have the god of death, right? But it also makes me feel like on the back end of that was that where we're different now is that once you explain to people what the sun was, how it worked, and what it did, they accepted it. Now if you tell people, hey, the buildings in this 9/11 truth or thing, here's all the science and the information behind it. And that kind of, we understand why you are looking for answers in, you know, the Twin Towers attack, because it's scary and you don't know what happened. We understand why you're looking for answers in autism, because it's scary. You don't want your kids to get it. And, you know, it seems like a lot more kids are being diagnosed with it. You don't want your kids to have it. So it's scary, and I can't explain it. Now it seems like even if scientists come out or doctors come out and say, hey, we understand why you're worried about these vaccines and causing autism, but here's the science behind it, and they're not, it still feels like people are like, yeah, fuck that, you liar.
You're the wrong person.
You're a liar.
Yeah.
And we just run into our corners and say, that guy is a liberal, that guy's a conservative, that guy's a right-wing nut job, that guy's a left-wing crazy lunatic. And we're like, I will stick to the fact that I believe there's a sun god. Or I will stick to the fact that there is no sun god. Like, it's like, we just, like, and there's nothing in the middle.
No, 100%. And the thing is, and the great ironic thing about America being a kind of new, place where this was even more central and defining to the culture than anywhere else is we were also founded, or the United States was founded, right, at the time of the Enlightenment. The founders, Jefferson, Adams, all these guys were these, you know, educated. This is the Enlightenment. We're educated now. Now we know science. We believe in science. There's no sun gods, all of it, right? And everyone else is primitive. These primitives were among us who believe this stuff. So it was made as that, but the flip side of the Enlightenment, because everything has a flip side, you know, whether it's nuclear power or AI. Everything has a bad side or good side.
Yeah.
The flip side was like, well, no, the Enlightenment meant you didn't have to believe in this Catholic religion anymore, this religion anymore. You can find your own answers. Well, mostly, or that was, oh, you mean we can believe in science, we can believe in evolution, we can believe in geology and all the things that science has discovered. Well, it also means you can kind of believe whatever you want. So, that's rather than what, you know, the priest tells you to believe. So, yes, it does go back further. And as you're suggesting, that like religion for millennia before Christianity existed and since has been people, you know, who don't even either have the means or the desire to believe in scientific explanations for things, decide to believe them. The other thing about science that like lately has given it, made it vulnerable to all kinds of, No, I don't believe that. I don't want to believe that. Is that the way science works is it changes its mind and its consensus as new facts come along.
Sure.
Right? Whereas, you know, just your belief in the sun god or the 9/11 conspiracy or whatever it is nope, that's my belief. And new facts can't really change it.
Well, and on top of that, you talk about, I don't recall his name, but you talked about a guy in your book who was... I think he's a psychologist, the University of Arizona guy. I think it was University of Arizona.
Yeah.
For people who haven't read it, can you explain? Because the gist of it was that here's a guy who believes some pretty, I think a reasonable person would say, crazy things, like just, you know, fantastic things that are not based in science. But he's approaching it as if, no, there is evidence to back up these fantastic beliefs and that these fantastic things do exist. I mean, this is a guy who doesn't believe in coincidences. So, and I know cops don't believe in coincidences either, but different thing. But he believes that this stuff, no, it's not just like it's my own belief. I'm going to try and prove it with science. And we now live in a country where, and maybe we used to, I don't know, maybe this hasn't changed, but it seems odd to me that a university would say, hey, let's go ahead and hire this guy, let him be a professor, and we'll have him publish papers about how God talks to him. Was that always a thing if he wasn't, teaching?
No, that wasn't always a thing. I mean, that's what I'm saying really started happening 50, 60 years ago, is the openness to other ways of looking and thinking about things. I mean, that guy was an anthropologist. Carlos Castaneda, okay. I think you're thinking of.
Yes.
The way the indigenous people of Mexico think that, you know, they can be coyotes one night and humans the next. Well, that's a legitimate way of looking at things. So, and again, that wasn't a right-wing way of believing in a thing that, you know, doesn't seem
right
to many people to be true. It was, from the cultural left, right, too. So this hasn't always been a, you know, reality-based liberals versus, you know, conspiracy theorist right-wingers. It was, if anything, the opposite, you know, when I was a kid. So, exactly. That, and when universities
or some universities and some parts of academia began deciding that, oh, indigenous people, what we used to call primitive people, may believe this. We can't dismiss that. Well, no, we can't dismiss it, but it's like an apple and an orange. They are different species of understanding the world. And, you know, you can believe your religious beliefs, whatever they are, but science is a different thing that is true on its own terms without whatever, you know, to me about religion and why I'm not anti-religion. It's just that religion, like anything else, all beliefs have to adapt to new facts when the new facts come. And I, you know, one can believe, and I know very religious people who say, oh yeah, no, I believe in evolution. I believe in this, I have this, and it's just more evidence of God's miraculous doing. Okay, cool. Go with it. Yeah. Right.
But plenty who don't, because they say, no, that flies in the face of what my religion says, so I don't believe in evolution.
Right, right, right. No, and again, as people say, there is no, you know, the absence of God has not been proven, but like, okay, believe whatever supernatural explanations for reality that you want. But that shouldn't make you disbelieve what science has proven, because, you know, you don't think your car is going to magically run again after it gets totaled, right? I mean, people go through daily life understanding how reality works.
And based on evidence and prior experience.
These other realms, they just like, nope, this is what I believe. That's, you know, and again, yes, as I say in the book, it's always been true to an extent, but it was always kept under control by gatekeepers.
This is theology, you know, or this is faith. This is a religion. This is you know, something that was handed down for generations, and it was used to explain this. And yeah, we should teach. It's fine to teach people, hey, this is what these people believe. This is what these people believe. This is what some people used to believe. But to say, no, you know what? Maybe we should teach people that stuff could be true. Well, sure. Yeah. I mean, it could be. Right. Just like you said, maybe when my car blows up and there's nothing left but a charred husk, maybe it will still start and drive me to work in the morning. But there's no reason to believe that, because there's been no evidence to suggest that that's possible.
Exactly. No, and the thing about these periods in history that happen, when you take the really long view, and that I mentioned in the book, you know, the great, and one of you mentioned, you know, the Greeks made up their gods. Yes, they did. But at the same time, the Greeks were having their own gods. They had this moment of science, of like the beginnings of modern science in, you know, 2,500 years ago. And great literature and humor and art and all these things. And a kind of dark age had preceded that. And then this amazing time lasted for 300 years or something. And then suddenly, well, that's over. And they went back into like believing in magic. So, you know, what we in the last, you know, our lifetimes, the last 500 years, like, oh no, this is a permanent like progression. It's progress. We're going forward. We're seeing the light. Well, maybe not.
Not necessarily.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when I read your book, one of the things I thought was that there's two things that cause people to feel this way that I can come up with. One is when we feel like we've lost control, which we kind of touched on earlier. We want to feel like we're in control, and it doesn't have to mean us, like you personally, but that somebody is in control. And that really plays into like the QAnon conspiracies, anything where there's a new world order, that someone's in control. Nothing could just happen, because that's too scary to believe. And the other part of that is, too, I think that because we, for so long, maybe really did believe or tried to really believe in so many fantastic things, that when people tell you you've lived in this age of enlightenment as long as you have, and science tells you, well, no, there's an answer for this and there's an answer for this, that maybe there is something in our genes that wants magic to be real. And so we're looking for, and it seems crazy to call QAnon magic, but in a way it is, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because it's extremely hard to believe, and you have to have kind of faith, because it's not just based on evidence to believe in all conspiracy theories. So it's like, on one hand, it's that I want to have control, and on the other hand, I also just, it's fun to believe in something bigger.
Sure.
And to believe like I've got some of the answers that other people don't, because I'm paying attention. You hear people all the time say, educate yourself. When you say, I don't think vaccines will do that, well, educate yourself. That's always it, right? Educate yourself, because that implies I've spent a lot of time doing this and I am now smarter than you.
Which is so fucking annoying, because it's like, what did you do? Did you learn how to make a vaccine? You just Googled the same shit I did. Just put vaccines cause autism as opposed to vaccines don't cause autism. We're all looking at the same stuff on the internet, right?
No.
That's just how we want to perceive it.
Right. Well, then their response would be, you don't make vaccines. He was like, right, but there used to be a time where we trusted the people who do make the vaccines.
Right, exactly.
And we stopped trusting those people somewhere along the way.
No, and again, it's not unique to America by any means, but the not trusting the guys in charge, not trusting intellectuals, not trusting experts, that from the get-go in the United States, or in America before it's the United States, has been a big theme. I mean, again, not among the founders, not among the elites, but that was always an American thing. And so that went out of control. And that's a good thing to have. I mean, some anti-establishment feeling good. Some like, no, I don't believe this. Some of that, in moderation is great. And just as part of this thing as we said earlier, part of it is, you believe in anything, you think you can do anything or whatever. Well, that's also dreaming of, making $1 million or whatever it is. But it's a question of like, okay, in moderation, and we are not in a moment of where in moderation of anything is happening, and we've just become so binary. It's either this or it's that.
You mentioned something that I think, and I've talked about it plenty of times before on the show, and it's so fascinating to me. It is the clear death of expertise. And you see it weekly. If I go onto the internet and whatever the big story in the news is, people went from being drone and military drone experts to experts in how to put out wildfires and remove salt from the ocean sea and get to use it on these wildfires, to experts on how to stop school shootings, to experts on how to cure COVID. It's like every week there's a new catastrophe, and I don't see anybody stopping and going, hey, yo, how do you do this?
Yeah, what does
nobody
the expert
says,
actually
how do you
say?
Do this? Like, let me tell you how you do this.
And the thing is, in real life, again, whether it's your car not working or not, or anything, playing on the guitar, anything that or that you would like to learn or that you use, it takes time to learn this thing. And I just picked up a guitar and I could play a chord. I guess I can play the guitar. No, you can't. And you know that.
Right.
So why in these more important things, like, as you say, what causes COVID or how do you stop wildfires? really? You think you just read a couple of hundred words and you think you're an expert now? I mean, the freedom, the crazy freedom to think that is what's new.
And the unearned confidence in what you're saying. At a young age for a long time was overly confident in my opinions. If I read something, I thought, well, that must be true. If someone's arguing with me, I know this, so I know I'm right. Well, eventually you have enough times where someone calls you out and you go, I wasn't right, where you go, right, I might not always be right. And you learn from it. Just like with the Loose Change documentary. I watch that documentary and go, well, now I know. And then someone says, no, that wasn't true. You go, oh, so maybe me watching something, reading something, thinking I know something, maybe I'm not an expert, maybe I don't know. But you look at people online, at least if we were just to judge by the things that we see on social media, everyone is so convinced they're absolutely right. And that goes back to the why they don't want any type of nuance, because it's all black or white. If I'm willing to admit that maybe there could be a side effect to some vaccine, well, then now I must be an anti-vaxxer.
Right.
So I can't say that. So I have to say there's never been a side effect. And it's exacerbated by social media. And at this point, in a place where I don't know how the hell we go back.
Right.
Well, that's the problem. That's where you get so far into this that, what has to happen for, as they say, the fever to break. I mean, these things don't last forever. I mean, either the good or the bad. But I still have a glimmer of hope that for somehow, some way, by some means, maybe a terrible means where it gets so bad that X, Y, and Z happen, people say, hey, enough of this.
I don't know, but yeah, it's people, the degree to which this, as you're saying, it's black or white. It's you're on this team or that team, and you either better believe everything that this team or that some of the leaders of this team say, or you're out, or you know, it's just not the way. It's not the way most people want to live, I think. And, you know, and we talk about, oh, we're polar split, 50-50 and all that. We obviously are in election terms. But I don't think, I'm so hopeful that we aren't really.
Me too. People
who are most certain of the, most certain, and that we see them on social media, of course, of I believe this, and I'm right and you're wrong, and fuck you, are not a tiny minority, but minorities. That's my
hope. Right.
Yeah, they're the
vocal minority.
Well, there's
also, you know, as we say that and we mention the death of expertise and all those other things, it also isn't another thing that seems like it, I mean, fairly recently, but I'm sure you could tell me that it's not, but just a complete lack of self-awareness. Yeah. Like, when I'm driving, I'm like, ah, fuck, man. I think we were in Florida on vacation. My kids are like, how do they build bridges? I'm like, I have no fucking idea. Like, that seems really hard. Like, this bridge is giant, and it's going on forever as we're crossing onto another island.
Looking at it, it doesn't make sense.
No fucking idea. No idea. You know, somebody's really smart. And, like, my awareness of that is, like, I have no idea. I could learn something about it, but if I Googled it today, I don't think I could build one. Then the other part of that is, I'm also self-aware of what my role is in society, and I think that's lost too. My role is, my job has been around since, you know, hookers have been around. My job is to make the king laugh. I'm the court jester. I'm the guy who's supposed to entertain you. I juggle. That's what I do. I do it on the radio and whatever other platforms we have. I entertain people and make them laugh while they go out and build bridges and do important things. Like, and so, you know, I do happen to think what I do is important by entertaining those people and getting their minds off, you know, doctors, hopefully for a minute, their minds off what a horrible day they had when they were trying to cure whatever they were trying to cure. But the point being is, like, there doesn't seem to be a self-awareness of where you are in society and what you do. And then what you would have to do to get to where you want to be. Meaning, I don't know how to build a bridge. If I want to learn how to build a bridge, then I would have to go through these steps to learn how to build a bridge. Instead, I'm going to be the court jester. You know, maybe Google it a couple times and then tell you that this bridge is fucked up and they should have built it this way.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. And it's yes, the unearned sense of one's own expertise. But again, I mean, the thing we've gotten to a couple of times in this conversation is, like, why do you possibly believe you know these important things? Because when it comes to actually, as you say, building the bridge curing cancer or whatever the thing is, right, you know you can't do that. You know you wouldn't, you know, perform the surgery your wife needs, but right, you'll tell your neighbor you shouldn't do take this vaccine because it'll kill you. I mean, yeah, it's nuts.
Right, and I have kids, and you know, I had them when these vaccine, you know, this, you know, that'll cause. Of course, I got my kids vaccinated, but I would be lying to you if I wasn't fucking nervous, if I wasn't worried. Like, are these people right? Like, what if I'm the idiot? What if I'm wrong? Like, I get it. There's science, but, you know.
Don't be so sure.
Jenny McCarthy ain't an idiot. You know, like, I don't know. So, and when it comes to something you love so much as your kids, you're like, what? I don't. My only job is to protect them. What if I hurt them? So, like, I understand the idea behind it. And, of course, I said, all right, you know, they're doctors. I'm not. Yeah. That's the part of being self-aware and understanding the experts, right? Yeah. But no, the doubt of it is no problem. Yeah. You can be doubtful. I'm still doubtful. I don't know why autism rates are high. I have no idea.
Exactly right. No, I mean, it is not either you trust the science or you don't. I mean, that's such a stupid false choice. And
right,
so many things are reduced to that. Either this is true or that's true, and, you know, it's one or the other. You got to choose. No, it's not.
Right.
I wish that there was a way that we could distract people.
Right. Like, you know, the same thing using the bridge analogy. Sorry to interrupt you, but, you know, I don't know if that bridge is going to collapse, so I'm going to go ahead and get my car on it.
Right.
I'm following. Here we go.
Well, you do put trust in those people. When you get on an airplane, you look out there and you go, I don't know how this works, but I'm glad somebody knows how it works.
I don't know how to fly it.
And I trust that they know how to do it. So obviously these people are willing to put their trust in others in certain areas.
In other experts, but that's why I'm like, I don't get why they don't, why it's so, such a pick and choose thing.
Yeah, suddenly I'm the expert on this. I wish that there was a way to, for these people who need because there's been lots of debate about what's caused this uptick. Is it just social media? Is it, some people blame the decline in number of people going to church or identifying as religious. Maybe they need something bigger to believe in. And so now they go on subreddits and read about different conspiracies because now they're part of a community and all these things. I wish that there was something that we could distract people with that just wasn't so harmful. Because when you talk about people not getting vaccinated, that hurts me. That hurts grandma. That hurts other people around you. When you talk, lots of things, lots of conspiracies can lead to actual real world consequences that affect us all. I just wish there was some way that we could distract them. And when I read your book, I thought, well, I guess that was religion. I mean, religion caused plenty of problems, of problems. But that's just it. Is there any? Maybe there is no such thing as a hobby that involves believing in something that doesn't exist, believing in something just kind of because you want to and because other people say, I'll be in on it with you, that doesn't eventually lead to some sort of harm. I don't know.
Well, I think that's a real point, and people sometimes deny it, that, you know, people who are you know, intensely, you know, active atheists, like, oh no, you cannot believe in God, you, or any mystical thing, or any, well, I don't think that, I think the loss of not even necessarily religious faith, but the community of faith built around the real Christ and, you know, helping people and turning the other cheek and being poor is better than being rich, all those things. I mean, the loss of you know, the community and, like, okay, there's a larger purpose here. I don't really understand it, but, like, yeah, sure. You know, amen. You know, was not all bad, you know, and in this country, more than elsewhere, where that the move to secularism and well, no, I don't believe in God anymore, and science is okay with me, and I like my life, and I like my children, and I like the sunrise, whatever it is. And there are large. That's the thing. Beyond hobbies, right? I mean, you can I can lay down and look at the stars at night and try and I read facts about how many galaxies there are and this and that. To me, that is awesome and just mind-boggling in a way that, like, it does for me, I think, what religious feeling does for others, sure. Right? So I don't think it has to, you have to live life without a sense of meaning and purpose, whether it is your children. To me, that's the closest thing I have to kind of quasi-religious faith is like, well, I'll do anything for these people, right? So, so I don't think, you know, it's, but yes, I think this society, this culture, I mean, I always say anybody's to blame exactly, but there's this change over the last 50 years, especially 80 years, of especially the mainstream Protestant churches, Methodists, Episcopalians, and all the rest, kind of in decline in favor of these more, you know, I want to feel it, I want to see it, I want to talk to God forms of religion, you know, the choice becomes either I don't believe in anything and it's all meaningless and I just want to make $1 million, or I believe in these extreme versions of supernaturalism. And, you know, it's a shame that there isn't this in-between set of, you know, purpose-driven, life-giving ways of thinking about the world.
And kind of mysticism about life. What is it? Why are we here?
Sure.
And it's magical in some ways. You can't tell me that it's not, because I know we don't understand all of it. I guess my thing is that for as far as these conspiracy theory groups, it's about, there is something about being part of a group that you think is kind of unique to you in this small group of people that you guys have you guys are on the end. You know what's going on. So, like UFO hunters and ghost hunters, I think maybe those two groups are groups of people that absolutely are oftentimes open to conspiratorial thinking, and they talk about a lot of conspiracies openly on those threads, and maybe they're not really hurting anybody. I don't know, but so maybe those things do exist, but I can't help but think that people want to feel like there's something bigger and like they know what it is, but not everyone else does, whatever that thing is.
Right, but that thing, that's, I think the point being is that some of these things are very detrimental to society.
Exactly.
And others aren't. Like, we're not that far removed from a bunch of hipsters saying, like, I'm the only one and my friends on the internet who know good music.
Yeah.
Right? And everything else was like, you don't know. Of course you haven't heard this song because you don't know.
Right.
I'm the one who knows.
I'm on the inside, you're on
right.
the outside.
And that's what we want. And so when I see QAnon, I'm like, that's just another group of hipsters with a different music.
Yes.
It's all it is. It's like, hey, this is our music. It's, you know, politics or religion or, you know, New World Order or whatever, but we're a group of people. And hell, when we started, even when I joined this thing, I might not have even been like-minded, but now I've been accepted into this group and I'm in the group, and that makes me a part of something. So I don't necessarily believe that maybe we want to see something so mystical as it is we want to be
of
a
course.
Part of something.
Absolutely.
And that's what church was on Sundays, probably. I don't know. I never went, but you went and you had one thing in common, and you were with your neighbors and you were part of a community and you stood together and you had fellowship. And now, I don't know, that's probably still there. I don't know. It doesn't explain to me why we've gone to QAnon, but or these other things. But it feels like those people just want to be a part of a community and a part of people who accept them.
That's a huge part of it. But I also think that conspiracy theories, like certain kinds, certain religions, and sometimes when they combine, like, well, let's say ISIS, people in ISIS, or, sure. for instance, to give an example that everyone hates, it's probably listening to this show.
Right, speak for yourself, sir. I love ISIS. Big fan. Big fan. I have a flag. I root for their soccer team. You should see me.
Really? Well, there you go. And, you know, Bob Dylan did that nice song called ISIS, too. Yeah. So, no, but it's that it's so much more easy and appealing. Like, it is to read bad fiction. It's like, you know, oh, it's all tidy. It's all, oh, they did this, she did this, and this is why it happened. It's life is... Reality is so much messier than that, almost always.
Right.
And like, it's too, it's hard to understand, well, who did this, why? I don't know. Well, we don't know for sure. Well, that's not fun.
Right,
It's not clear who did this, why. That's what people want. And so it's a more appealing story, and people love stories, you know?
Yeah, and I think that we can sit here and make fun of conspiracy theorists, but we've talked on our show over the years many times about conspiracy theories. We'll just ask, all right, what's the conspiracy theory
that you believe?
Because everyone's got one. Like, even you have to have a conspiracy or something that many people might consider conspiratorial, Kurt, that you believe.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting that you say that, because the book I wrote after Fantasyland, and I realized there's this whole other thing I was interested in and should write, which is sort of the other half of, you know, what's happened in the last 50 or 100 or 200 years in this country, which is, well, how did we get to this point of, you know, inequality and taking down the social safety net and all these things of the last 50 years? And, you know, we had a pretty good thing going when my parents were young, and, you know, for 100 years we were going in the right direction, and, you know, oh, we make Social Security, oh, Medicare now, old people don't have to get sick and die. Oh, good. And then suddenly, things kind of went kaplooey about 40, 50 years ago. Well, how did that happen? Why did that happen? Well, what I came to believe when I wrote this book called Evil Geniuses is, well, I don't believe in conspiracy theories of a stupid, untrue kind. But there was something like there's a way to think about the way people with their own interests, or maybe so often their own malign interests, get together, or more or less get together, or effectively get together and to achieve something over a long period of time. And that's kind of what happened here. So I went from writing this book to saying, oh, Americans believe in conspiracy theories and it's become a dangerous weakness. Well, but
you know, the, one of its problems is that it makes the occasional one things, explanations that are real and that smack of conspiracy theory aren't wrong, right? It's a tiny minority, in my view, of things that are basically positing conspiracies, and they're rarely as vivid and like a thriller as conspiracy theorists usually have them. But let's not disbelieve them all, right?
Sure.
But when there's so much chaff to finding the wheat or the needle in the haystack, or choose your metaphor, that's the problem too. It makes it harder to see the people who are really out to get you, you know, yeah, and really screwing your life up.
Exactly. So that's Evil Genius. I got to be honest, Evil Geniuses, I just saw when our producer said that he booked this, I saw that you'd written Evil Geniuses, and I just got it, so I haven't even started it yet.
Oh,
but
great.
I'll be interested to read it.
As a friend of mine says, he said, oh, good, you've written a two-volume history of the fuckinging of America.
Perfect. That would have been a good name, too. Parenthetical, the fuckinging of America.
Hey, I am interested in one thing. You grew up in Omaha?
I did.
You did? And when did you leave to go to college? And your wife grew up in Kansas City.
Well, you've done your research. Indeed so, yes. My wife grew up in Kansas City. We were, you know, 200 miles apart on the Missouri River. And we both went east to college and then...
So she grows up in Kansas City. You grew up in Omaha. You're the only two people from either one of those cities to go to Harvard, and you meet.
well,
that's amazing.
We may or may not have met in college.
Okay.
We're not sure. We went out on my first and last blind date right after college.
Oh, okay. Are you a Royals fan?
You know, I'm not a huge. I'm more of a Chiefs fan than I'm a Royals fan.
Hey, okay. Yeah. Well, we'll take
but
that.
The farm team in Omaha was a Yankees farm team when I was a kid, so I was naturally, oddly, an Omaha Yankees fan.
More than
anything else. But you know, I grew up in Nebraska, so I had to be a Nebraska football fan.
Of course.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Well, Kurt Anderson, thank you so much for taking the time to do this. We really appreciate it. The book we've been discussing is called Fantasyland, How America Went Haywire, A 500-Year History. I suggest people read it. I did get your new book, Evil Geniuses, which I'll start this weekend. And there's other places people can find you. You've got that podcast, Studio 360, which my producer said, you know, that Studio 360, that's a Peabody Award winner.
It is a Peabody Award winner, but and there are still 1,000 episodes that are all available online.
I don't believe in the Peabody.
We never won one.
I heard somebody told me that it's not real, just bullshit made up. People write it. Right, I won a Peabody. It's not true.
No, yeah. Well, I won it twice, so there you go. But I did that for a long time, and now I've done a lot of things.
So, where else can people find you? What am I missing?
KurtAnderson.com tells people everything I've ever done and might do in the future. I'm just finishing a novel set in the future that's going to come out in a year. And, but my website is a pretty good place.
Right,
and I'm on every social media platform, basically. So there I am.
Awesome. Kurt Anderson, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure. This was great.
Thanks.
I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, come back on. We'll talk about your book about the future. I'm curious if you have a pessimistic view of the future.
Well, there's not an easy answer to that.
Okay. Right. Maybe we can find out. Thanks, Kurt.
Thank you.
And that is it. Thank you so much for listening. Toxic and Problematic is brought to you by Mitra 9 Kratom and Kava. Visit mitra-9.com and use promo code PROBLEMATIC for 25% off your order. Thank you to Direct Computer Outlet in Mission, Kansas for making our Twitch stream possible. Music graciously provided by Kid Computer. Thanks. Talk to you soon.